This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You know, you might think about taking Jesus Christ as your savior instead of fooling around with all this stuff.
Ah, Jesus.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
I like him very much. He no help.
You trying to say Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
What the hell's going on out here?
Well, Nuke's scared because his eyelids are jammed in his old man's hair. We need a live, was it a live rooster? We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove, and nobody seems to know what to get Millie or Jimmy for their wedding present.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
That's all we got? One damn hit?
You can't say damn on the air.
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Hour 2, Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, and of course, youtube.com/1080AM The Fan.
Good point from listeners that I had totally forgotten was that TJ Watt tied the Strahan record a couple of years ago.
Yes.
I don't know why I just blanked that from my memory, so Gastineau would not have the record either way.
Well, the weird thing about that, I had also forgotten that, but I saw it yesterday because Steelers fans were in the video mentions of like, hey, Watt also owns this record.
He's got 22.5 as well.
And maybe this is the NFL's fault. I feel like the way they teed up Strahan breaking the Gastineau record versus TJ Watt tying the Strahan record.
Bigger deal.
Vastly different.
Yeah, I feel that way too. Because I remember the Strahan play vivid. I remember when
the
that
game.
Happened.
That game, I don't remember what year that was. The Giants, I don't feel like were that
2011.
Great.
2011. No. I mean, 2001. Sorry. I think it was 2001.
So it's the year after their Super Bowl run.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what their final record ended up being, but I remember that game being a big deal because all week, all the shows were talking about how he could break the record that week. And Strahan and Favre had a good relationship.
It was funny, too, because if you go back and watch the clip, Aikman immediately was like, well, kind of took a bit of a dive there.
Yeah, and
I think nobody's happier than Brett Favre.
Yeah, that's
helping
what
his
he
buddy
said.
Out.
Nobody's happier
like, immediately
than Brett Favre.
On the call, he called it out.
Favre was helping him up off the ground. Like, it was a very weird. I remember as a kid, I was like, he kind of just gave it to him.
That was it. That's how it ends. All right.
But the Watt one tying it, I don't feel like they made as big a deal about that. So, like, to listeners' point, that's a good point by listeners. I don't feel like a lot of people remember that.
Yeah, they've also unofficially credited Al Baker with 23 sacks in 1978, and Deacon Jones has multiple seasons with 22.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah, yeah.
They didn't officially start counting sacks, I think, until like 1982. So, it's also a bit of a fake record anyways.
I didn't zig or zag it, but I probably could have. Did you see the report yesterday, by the way? I don't want to get sidetracked too much out of the college football, but did you see the random report from Larry Fitzgerald Sr.?
Yes.
Larry Fitzgerald Jr.'s dad is a newspaper writer, and I learned this at an internship in Seattle. When you reach out to Larry Fitzgerald, because he writes for a Minnesota paper, and he has for a very long time. That's why Larry Fitz grew up in Minnesota.
He was a ball boy for the Vikings.
When you reach out to his dad for an interview, his dad will respond, if you pay me, I'll do it.
Mm.
And I remember reaching out as an intern, got him on the phone. I said, hey, it's so-and-so. I'm in Seattle. We'd love to get you on to talk about the Vikings. He responded with, Larry Fitz don't do nothing for less than $80.
Appreciate the hustle.
That's exactly what he said to me. I was an intern. I didn't know what to say in response to that.
Has anybody got $80 around here? Anybody want to send this guy $80?
I put my hand on the bottom of the landline, and I looked at the producer and said, he won't do it unless he's paid. He goes, hang up.
Okay.
I said, all right, we can't do that. Thanks, though. And sorry. I hung the phone up.
Don't have any cash on me right now. Sorry, Larry.
Randy Moss announced that he had a health scare recently, and he didn't say what it was. Larry Fitzgerald Sr. just put out on Twitter that he's battling liver cancer.
Spread like wildfire. Not Twitter, not the cancer, but everybody ran with it. Oh my God, you know, thoughts and prayers. Randy Moss is clearly going through something. Yeah, and then his kid came out and said, no, that's
Thaddeus
not
Moss
true.
Said, you don't know my dad, so I don't think you talked to him. Did he clearly deny that that's it?
Ironically, Brett Favre was also involved in this, too, yesterday, because Brett Favre saw that and sent out a tweet saying, you know, thoughts and prayers to Randy. I love competing against you, blah, blah, blah. And Thaddeus Moss responded, Brett, the support is appreciated. This is not true. My father will address the world when he's ready to.
Yeah, it's pretty messed up for somebody to go out with stuff like that.
I don't know what wrong. We're doing. I mean, he's stepping away from ESPN. He's clearly going through something. I hope that that's not what it is. That's kind of a weird thing to have it reported. Everybody runs with it, and then the kid's like, hold on, why are we doing this right now? He'll let you know what's going on when he's
ready.
Can't
you just send thoughts and prayers without like having to put a health diagnosis on it?
Maybe don't need to be the newsbreaker on a diagnosis for somebody's medical condition.
Very odd.
Yeah, very strange.
I have pissed a college football fan base off.
Uh-oh.
Good for you.
Thank you.
That's my guy!
Penn State not very happy with Brandon Sprague on the BetQL Network calling Penn State somewhat fraudulent.
Uh-oh.
They did not enjoy that label.
Yeah.
I've got people in my Instagram mentions still commenting on me.
Still going at you.
Oh, yeah. I got a lot of clown emojis yesterday.
I love it.
And I responded to almost all of them. I was bored. I was in my bed. I was just resting a little bit. I'm like, you know what? I got time. I got time for you clowns.
I'm going to respond to you today. Bring it on.
They, none too pleased that I said that their path, that they were given something they didn't necessarily earn. And when highlighting... their schedule and their big wins or their, you know, not so big wins, they didn't really have much of a response other than calling me the R word.
Okay.
Or a biased and blind idiot.
Biased and blind idiot.
Yeah. Okay. With some capital R words dropped.
Yeah, let's drop some capital R words. That's a very adult way to handle things.
Yes.
Because somebody saying your team's fraudulent is just the most offensive thing that you could say to anybody on the planet.
I also enjoy that I was a duck honk.
Yes, you were.
I was called that a couple times. I also enjoyed...
We know you wear green and yellow underwear.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do. I also had people tell me that I clearly didn't watch the game because if I had, I'd know that the refs actually gave Oregon that win, not the
Ducks
beating Penn
State. Of course,
State.
And nothing to do with James Franklin being unable to beat top 10 teams and their defense getting absolutely shredded the entire game and, you know, valid face mask penalties getting called early in the game and sure, could a couple of flags gone either way. That's the way football games work. I love the blaming of officials. Ohio State fans were doing that earlier when they played Oregon as well. How'd that work out for them? We'll get you the second time when we don't have to deal with the officials at Autzen Stadium. Well, then he didn't even get there because he couldn't beat Michigan. I love how sensitive fans are.
There's going to be some sensitive fan bases involved in these first-round games with some upsets.
It's so funny because saying anything critical of any team immediately leads to the loud mob saying, why do you hate us? Why do you hate our team? Why you're so biased. You're so anti. Instead of just, hey, I'm just stating an opinion, man. Let's not sit here and act like Penn State over the last 15 years has been a wagon beating elite teams. Let's not act like James Franklin has a great track record. Their best win on the season is...
It's Illinois.
Illinois.
And I had somebody say that. It was like, you jokingly call Illinois mighty Illinois. They're top 25 and they earned it. And I said, please tell me the difference between Illinois at 9-3 and Duke at 9-3.
There's no difference.
Just one's in the Big Ten and they get the benefit because of the conference.
That's what people bringing up great points on SMU in terms of the playoff discourse. If they don't have any wins over top 25 teams, it's like, well, that's just because they've chosen to not rank Duke in the top 25. They're 9-3. They have the same record.
SMU beat Duke by one in overtime.
Duke
or
went
double.
For two
overtime.
To try and win the game, and they didn't get the two-point conversion.
Right.
They were that close to knocking them off, but that's not good enough for Duke to be ranked in the top 25. Yet Missouri, who got just body-bagged anytime they played a team with the polls, I believe is also 9-3 or 8-4, and they're somehow ranked in the top 25, because that's how this stuff works. It is so funny how sensitive fan bases get. Like, if somebody wanted to come at me and say, hey, Oregon's got a pretty weak schedule this year outside of Ohio State, I mean, all their big games have been at home, blah, 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 prior to this past weekend. Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong.
Sure.
Hey, they've had issues stopping the run at times. Yeah, they have.
Yeah.
Offense has been a little clunky from time to time. Yeah. I mean, they might be the best team in the country. They're certainly flawed. They're not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I love when people can't take the slightest bit of criticism against their team.
What is Franklin now in these big games? He's like, is it 4-22 or something?
I mean, it's
like
legitimately,
that, right?
I think he's like 0-16 against top 5 teams, and he's lost all, you know, every top 10 teams. It's like he's lost 14 or 15 of them in a row. He hasn't beaten a top 10 team, I think, since they beat Ohio State in 2016.
What I found interesting was the response was, we only lost by a score. Like, they have moved the goalposts now with their coach and their situation where they no longer win these games but they really hang their hat on, we yep. almost won, and we only lost by X amount.
Which is so funny, because after the Ohio State game, they wanted to run him out of town. They booed him off of the field after yeah. they blew a 10-0 lead at home to Ohio State.
Yep.
Could only muster, what, one offensive touchdown in that game? No, they didn't even score one, because they had the defensive touchdown and two field goals,
yeah.
and that was it. And then they boot him off the field, and now they lose a close game to Oregon. It's like, hey, at least the offense looked good. Great job, guys.
Yeah.
It's a very weird, differing reaction to those two games.
I don't know if they're the number one fan base and team that if they lose in the first round at home here, they're going to be the most angry and emotional.
I think Ohio State probably takes that.
I feel like they're already there.
You think they're already there? Well, that, I think, further solidifies. Like, if you lose a back-to-back games at home, they don't even win a play. They were title or bust this year. And if they don't even win a playoff game.
If Tennessee is up 7 and it's the final minute and it's clear kneel down, whoever's left in that stadium, it might be a fire day chant going on.
It's
going
to be ugly, man.
And honestly,
it's gonna be
to ugly. Not win a playoff game with a $23 million roster might be warranted.
It would be a bit of an issue. Although it also is an issue to lose to SMU at home in a playoff game.
Ooh.
When they're going to be looking like Cool Runnings getting out of the airport going to the Winter Olympics. And none of their fans are going to be there because you can't get to State College that time of year, and it's graduation weekend. Neither of those fan bases will be in a good spot if they lose.
We'll talk with Josh Pate coming up at 7:40. Coming up next, when you get turned on by your own fan base and something that flew right under the radar. We'll get to that next on The Fan. She did advance my way. All right, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app. YouTube as well. You can reach the show at the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. They teach you right before, during, and after the sale. Visit them at VancouverFord.com. Josh Pate's going to join us coming up at 7:40. The portal's active. Coaches are jumping ship left and right. Got hires all over the place. Something that flew under the radar. I know you saw it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not something we talked about. And before I play this audio clip, I want to just highlight it. There's a weird thing brewing between a former player of a college team and the program. And it's not that somebody's not allowed to make their own decisions and go where they're most happy. But did you see the random commitment a week ago? Kirk Herbstreit's kid committed to Michigan.
I did see that.
And
which
I
is very weird.
Well, we had a Molden commit to the Huskies.
Yeah. Sure, it's not even that's not even the part of it. You know what position he plays?
Quarterback.
Who yeah. else did they just sign?
Underwood.
Yeah. They just signed the number one kid in the country.
Well, I don't think Kirk's.
He's
son
a three-star recruit.
Is
he's not a
big
top
time. You
know, which
like,
again,
he's
why
not
like
on Ohio State's
why
radar?
Well, Kirk Herbstreit
getting a scholarship.
I mean, he's a three-star kid. He could have gone anywhere and played or gotten a scholarship. Like, this wasn't the only scholarship offer he had. I just,
true.
Michigan's
I found that
got a good deal, man. I mean, is that any different than, like, Novosad going to Oregon? He's a four-star kid. He
yeah,
chose to go to Oregon.
I would have said that if he committed the same time the number one player in the country committed, I would say to him as well, what are you doing?
Well, Gabriel came in this year after Nick's left.
Yeah, I get it, but he's not the same class.
They went Gabriel's, got Dante Moore.
Gabriel's 1 year, and then he's going to have a chance to vie for the starting job. Like, he will never play for Michigan. Mark this down, write it down, Sharpie, whatever. He will never take a snap for Michigan.
Okay, but Michigan might be a cool, it's a great school.
It's a great school.
It might be a really cool atmosphere. The coaches could mm-hmm. be really awesome, and yeah. he just might want the college experience.
Yeah, he could play.
Arch went to Texas, and Quinn Ewers was already
he's
there.
He's going to play this year, or next year. He's going to be the starting quarterback.
All right, well, all right.
It was very weird that he went to Michigan for me.
But
that
it was a
strange.
Big deal. It's a yes. Herbstreit going to Michigan, right?
Yes.
Yeah, like if he went to some other random school, like, because they lived there. Well, they lived in Nashville for a while. If you went to Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Because that kid's played there for, what, 8 years or whatever?
Diego Pavia?
Yeah.
Well, not there for 8 years, but he's been in college for 8 years.
This would not have been a headline. It was only a headline because it went to Michigan.
Right. Yeah. Anyways, they lived in Nashville because for a while there, Ohio yeah. State and Herbstreit were on rocky ground. It's a weird thing.
Buckeye Nation can't take it when Herbstreit is critical.
Well, look, I dealt with a few people on Instagram with one comment about what I think about this Penn State team.
Yeah.
Imagine being Kirk Herbstreit and giving yeah. any negativity feedback yeah. on Ohio State.
You were also blocked by Kirk Herbstreit, so you know that he can be a little sensitive as well. That happened.
But he had a bad take. To be honest, I was in the
right
on that one.
You were completely in the right.
I was in the right on that one.
So I'm just saying the relationship there can go both ways as well. I think he can be a little sensitive.
Well, here is 97.1 The Fan in Columbus, Ohio, the home of the Buckeyes. And here is a radio host, Mike Ricordati, giving his take on Kirk Herbstreit. Take a listen to this.
Playoff bracket unveiled yesterday. By the way, I like how everybody's just discovering now that Kirk Herbstreit's a douchebag. Like, I've been talking about this for 20 years. Welcome to my world. Now, there's stuff behind the scenes, and there's some personal stuff that goes into my story. But this is a guy who's always been ashamed of college football fans. This is a guy who makes his living talking down to you. Mm-hmm. For some reason, people still eat it up. They think he's the everyman. Oh, look at him.
Well, no, because
look at him and his dog.
This is the...
Look at him and his dog.
Look at him and his dog. Not kind words out of Columbus, Ohio. Kirk Herbstreit.
No.
Not number one most loved.
So I think this guy tried to argue that he's had a past relationship with Herbstreit and that he went essentially behind his back to try and get him fired. Mm. But then every time he would see him in person at a Buckeye game or whatever, you know,
pretend they're really
cool. Hey, you know, and he'd give him the pat on the back and the hello.
It's quite often that happens in media.
But, and then behind his back, he'd go to his bosses and say, you got to get rid of this guy or you got to fire this guy. So it is interesting to see him get attacked. There was also a clip that went viral of Chase Herbstreit when he was, I don't know, this was probably 10 years ago, maybe, mm-hmm. maybe 9 years ago. It looked like he was about 8 or 9, and he was on the set of the game day on the stage with Herbstreit, and he was getting ready to call an Ohio State game that night, and he obviously can't pick the game when it's an Ohio State, or he's calling the game, he can't pick it. And so he had his son come up, he's like, who are you picking tonight? And Chase Herbstreit had an Ohio State shirt on, and lifted it up, and the crowd went crazy, and so the kid clearly grew up a Buckeye fan.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, random commitments happen, you mentioned the Molden one, but when you get comments like this from a local radio host inside Columbus, it's an interesting look there.
Where's our boss sit on that one? Because he worked with Kirk Herbstreit at the start of Herbstreit's career, but he also did. Worked for the radio station.
First question I have is, have the Buckeyes made an offer to him? I'm sure he could walk on there if he wanted. But
he's a Herbstreit. I mean, isn't that like go without saying?
I don't know.
I said, if he wanted to walk on, there'd be a space for him. Well, that I don't doubt. But did they offer him a scholarship?
It's interesting because that is a big deal that his son is a Michigan guy versus trying to go to Ohio State. Would Duck fan have cared if Akili Smith Jr. went to USC? Would that have mattered to Duck fans? I don't know if it would have.
So.
Not really.
I think they would have been like, hey, that's cool. Look at our former quarterback's kids. A 4-star quarterback commit, and he's going to go play college. How cool is that?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of the attitude perspective shift. I think you get West Coast sports fan versus Midwest diehard blue blood college football people who live and die by every single second of this.
It looks like, so I can't quite pull up who, I'm trying to find like who offered him. It looks like he was also taking official visits to Cincinnati and Penn State.
Couldn't you make an argument that Michigan offers him mainly just to say we've got a Herbstreit committed here?
I mean, probably. It's just kind of a final trolling.
A little ribbing right there.
They have a legislator in Ohio who's trying to introduce a bill that says it's a felony to plant a flag at Buckeye Stadium, let's focus on the real issues that help Americans and, you know, put food on the table and bring down prices.
That's what they tend to do, is not actually care about
this is how
people.
We handle the real issues
they
that face
fired
Americans.
Fired up on culture war.
And then, so you twist the knife a little bit and you offer the kid, and Chase Herbstreit ends up committing. There have been this scuttlebutt exists around Kirk Herbstreit. I've met him one time in person, so I have obviously no relationship with Kirk Herbstreit, but this scuttlebutt behind the scenes in the media world does exist around him.
Well, I've highlighted before, college football, the world that's in it, people just seem to be very unhappy. And like yesterday, you saw West Virginia President Gordon. Is it Gee or is it G?
I do not know.
It's G-E-E. He used to be at Ohio State.
I think it's G.
I think it's G as well.
We'll go with G.
Gordon G, who is now at West Virginia, again, worked at Ohio State. He came out and, to no shocking development, announced that college football's broken.
Ah.
The reason it's broken, he says, is we've gotten to a consumer-oriented approach. Without a doubt, college football is broken. We have to fix it.
Yes, that'll happen, Gordon.
Didn't hear any of these thoughts years ago when Ohio State was just running through all the five stars and not allowing any other programs to get any players.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe don't fire your coach who's been above 500, not great, but, you know, you're West Virginia and you wouldn't have this issue. He was also lamenting the fact that they have to hire a physics professor and nobody on campus cares about that, but they care about the head coaching search.
It's the front door to universities.
Yeah, you should care.
They might go Rich Rod again.
They might. They could go Rich Rod.
He said he could be the prodigal son.
He just won a conference title.
He did with Jacksonville State. He's had a good run, man. Still a good coach.
I want to talk with Josh Pate of some of those comments that Gordon G. made yesterday. We'll talk about the playoff as well. So Josh Pate's going to join us at 7:40. We're back with a whole lot more Dirt and Sprague on the Fan.
Well, thanks to the this is why the audience is there, man. They're always there for us.
He's our guardian of victory.
Yes, they are.
Chase Herbstreit only had one scholarship offer in college. That was it.
I'm telling you, I'm wondering if Michigan did it.
That was the only one. He's a three-star kid. Like, how was there not? I know nothing about Chase Herbstreit's high school accolades as a quarterback.
Sure.
Shockingly.
Yeah.
But if you're ranking him as a three-star prospect,
how does he not have more than one?
How is there not like a Miami, Ohio, or a, I don't know, Bowling Green, or pick a random school from out there offering this kid a scholarship? How does he not have one other scholarship offer as a three-star?
I also don't know how they gauge it. Like, who's to say there wasn't, but everybody kind of knew Michigan was going to do this to piss off Ohio State, and so maybe he committed at a earlier point? I don't know.
So in my face, I guess that's why he committed. I figured he had to have had more scholarship offers. That's why I was like, why would you go to Michigan and sign with Bryce Underwood in the same class instead of going somewhere where you had to have a chance to play?
But
it's his only offer.
Maybe he'll be a backup, Dirt, and you might be right in that he doesn't start, but what if Underwood goes out?
Like, I mean, is he going to be their backup, though? Because they have six quarterbacks on their roster currently. He might eventually get there.
But Orgy's probably leaving, right? I don't know why Orgy would stay unless he's going to switch positions. But my thing is, I think you're overlooking that, like, Michigan could just be a great environment, situation, place to be. And also, it's good for them because they get to say they have a Herbstreit.
They got a Herbstreit on their roster. This came out yesterday. We'll get to Josh Payton in one second. Rich Clark, the director of the College Football Playoff, is doing some interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And he said one of the things that they're going to start leaning on potentially in the future to decide who makes the College Football Playoff, artificial intelligence.
Yeah, the BCS computers.
AKA computers.
We're back to where we started, though.
I don't think they technically do, although they look at certain metrics, but there's not one that's like a, I don't know, does that make sense?
A tell-all?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's nothing that's kind of combines everything. I know they have something called game control.
I mean, there's game control. That's a metric. There's strength of schedule, strength of record, strength of loss, strength of win, strength, you know. There's a million different metrics that they tie together. Now they're going to ask an AI computer to just basically say, hey, computer, who's the top 12 teams?
Yes, the 13th member is IBM's Watson.
It is. Watson will be in the room there. They said AI will never take over, but it might be a tool community
we could
use.
I want the Mike Riley Watson discussion.
Who do we trust more, 12 old people or Watson?
The funny thing is everybody would say computer initially because all of those 12 people have a school affiliation.
Yes.
Until we find out the engineer of the computer went to a certain university.
Cooks it up to have the books going.
That computer has a lean one way.
How the hell are they seventh? This makes no sense.
Isn't it funny how in a lot of ways we've already in such a short span come back like, we hated the BCS. The computers are wrong. They don't know it. We need people who actually watch to give us the opinions. And now we hate their opinions. We need the computers back. They did this with cable and streaming. It's like, hey, you're going to stream.
Snip, snap.
Yeah, cut the cord. But now you need 8 streams to watch all your stuff. I think they call that cable. I can't wait for them to redevelop the landline.
Bring back the robots, baby. Let's talk some more college football with the commissioner of the sport, Josh Pate. His thoughts on the playoff, the bracket. Where does he have Oregon going, and who do they lose to, or do they win the whole thing? We'll talk with Josh Pate coming up next on 1080 The Fan.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague hit the big stories you've heard about, and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague is poured by Pelican Brewing. Celebrate the season with a Northwest tradition, Bad Santa Cascadian Dark Ale. Pelican Brewing, born at the beach.
Hey, today's Daily Ticker brought to you by Pelican Brewing Company. We're making a list. We're checking it twice. Yeah. Got to find out if you're naughty or nice. I do have to say, I think our guest might be on the naughty list today.
Really?
I think he might be on the naughty list today. Joining
SEC
us now.
Honk? what's going on there?
Joining us now is the Commissioner of College Football, Josh Pate. Josh Pate's College Football Show every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock, live on YouTube. Catch a podcast wherever you find the podcast. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Josh Pate CFB. I did get the wife to subscribe, by the way, so Pate State material
How about
over
that?
Here.
Picked up another one.
Look, I'm watching the show Sunday, Josh, and I see Oregon's losing to Ohio State, and I'm like, damn, he hates my team. Because this is the way it works. Either are right or you hate my team and my lineage and my family and everything that comes with me. And then on the last night's show, I'm like, all right, he's making some changes to his predictions. I'm excited to see how far he has my Ducks going. And now he's got just one more game, and then they're losing to Texas. Mm. Not even getting to a championship. Why do you hate my team, Josh Pate?
Well, it's a long story. Dan and I have never gotten along, and I've always hated my trips up there. It's a really dead stadium, notoriously unloud. The colors suck. Yeah. They're really, really boring with their uniforms. Just for these reasons, among many others, I've always hated Oregon, and I can't express in strong enough terms how much it's reflected in my new bracket. How are you guys doing? Yeah,
we're doing fantastic, Josh. We had the bracket reveal. That was kind of fun and controversial to some. What did you think of Oregon's draw, though? Tennessee, Ohio State winner, and then potentially either a Kenny Dillingham, maybe a Dabo, the outside looking in, or Texas. What did you think of Oregon's draw?
Let's just be real. Okay, let's just put all our cards on the table. This is ridiculous, first off. That's what I think about the draw. Secondly, you're not seeing Dabo Swinney. The last time you see Dabo Swinney will be 4 o'clock Eastern time on that second day of the playoffs, and then they will be disposed of.
Yeah.
And, look, God bless Arizona State. I've loved that story, but they're going to get disposed of too. So you will be dealing with Texas if you get there. And at that point, we'll just knife fight on the air about who's going to win that game. I thought the draw was terrible. Dan Lanning and his team have said all the right things. They can't say anything other than that. They're competitors. It's almost like none of their business. This conversation's none of their business. It's the business of people who aren't actually coaching or playing, who just observe. Allegedly, the sport is made for us, the fans. So I looked at it a year ago, and I said, this format's BS. And I kept singing that chorus, and everyone kept saying, shut up, stop talking about it, stop complaining. So I said, okay, I'll be quiet. And then the closer we got to Selection Sunday, everyone sort of dusted off the hymnal and started singing the song that I was singing a year ago, saying, wait a second, this format, ladies and gentlemen, we may have a problem. And I'm like Tom Hanks up on Apollo 13 and said, you think we got a problem, huh? Now you think we've got a problem. Of course we had a problem. Well, now it's old hat, and everyone's pointed out what the problems are. But it's too late because the thing's already been seeded and it's already been set. So Oregon, for all I know, could go on and win the whole thing, and people will think it's a moot point. It's not a moot point. Just like it's not a moot point that Boise shouldn't have a first-round bye if they go and win their first game or if they lose by 30. Like, the format is either sound or it's not sound. The results within the tournament are irrelevant. Because you have to seed the thing not based on seeing the future. You have to seed it based on the body of work. And so I hate a lot of it, but you guys know I've had a long-standing gripe with expanding the thing to begin with. But even if we were going to expand it, the format's terrible. Now, I told you on the show last night that you were pointing out they had to agree to this format. I'm not stupid. I know why they had to agree to this format. So then the next order of business is how long will this agreed-upon format be in place? And I think the sands of time are rapidly fading on this format, even though we haven't played one version of the format yet.
Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it? Isn't that the great thing about college football? We're always going to have an evolving postseason format. Now, you got into it a little bit last night. I thought it was fascinating and actually kind of interesting, and it's going to connect to a question I want to ask you in a moment. But for our listeners, like, what – by the way, Beaverton, Oregon got a shout-out on the show last night. Love to hear that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the format that you're hearing and just kind of where you think this is going and how conference championship weekend will look in the years to come.
Yeah, so what the SEC and the Big Ten really wanted to get to is this format where their conference tournament, if you want to call it that, the process of deciding their conference champion is baked into the playoff itself. Forever, we have looked at the postseason as, all right, you go through the regular season, and then you crown your conference champion, and then you go on to the playoff. Well, the way they're looking at it is, We cannot allow these conference championship games to lose their value. We cannot allow that weekend to lose its value. We're getting way too much money from these networks for that. And so they've looked at that, and then they've also, especially in the SEC, they've looked at the concept that they think they got screwed out of spots because they play tougher schedules than everyone else. Now, I know which city I am speaking in right now. You don't have to agree with that. I am telling you merely what they think down there, and they happen to have the biggest microphone, so you will hear it whether you like it or not. So they're looking at all that, and they're saying, how do we rectify this moving forward? And the thing that I think they're going to move towards rapidly is they will look and they'll say, we've got to get an amount of guaranteed seats at the table. So they'll probably expand the playoff again, let's say to 14 or 16 or whatever. Well, whatever it is, what's going to happen is the Big Ten and the SEC are going to look to have a certain allocation of seats at the table. So they're going to kind of reverse engineer the playoff. So if we arrive at a format where the SEC and the Big Ten are guaranteed 4 playoff seats, guaranteed, then what they do is they work backwards from that. And they say, okay, now that we've got our guaranteed seats, we got to figure out which teams are going to be in it. Well, the way you do that is you use your conference standings. So your entire league schedule is basically an apparatus attached to the playoff at that point. And what you would do with that is you don't just get to the end of the road and put your 4 top teams in there. What you would do to reward your top 2 teams in your conference is you get to the end of the regular season, and let's say Texas and Georgia were the number 1 and number 2 teams in the SEC. Instead of taking them and putting them in the SEC championship game, you just tell whoever's number 1, all right, you won the SEC regular season tournament, you're the champion, whatever. But you take Georgia and Texas, and you put them in 2 of your guaranteed 4 seats. So they're in the playoff. The way you would determine 3 and 4 is the big key here. Because what I think they will do is they'll take that conference championship weekend, and instead of having a conference title game, I think they'll have 1, or in this case, 2 play-in games where 3 would play 6. So like Bama would play Tennessee, Ole Miss would play South Carolina in a 4-5 game. And the winners of those games would take seats 3 and 4 in the playoffs. That's how I think it'll happen in the Big Ten. That's how I think it'll happen in the SEC or something along those lines. Now, there are great follow-up questions that I know the professionals in that studio are going to ask, so I'll ask them for you. Well, what about the ACC? I think they'd have the same thing. I just think they'd have less guaranteed seats. Ditto for the Big 12. I think there will be guaranteed seats. I just think there will be less of them because there's going to be an acknowledgement that has to happen that they are lesser than conferences. Again, I reiterate, you don't have to like that. I'm merely telling you where I think it's going. I think there would probably be some at-large spots left there. I think there would be a G5 spot or whatever. But I think that's where we're headed. Now, do I like it? Of course I don't. I don't like any of this. I am like Mr. Potter in It's a Wonderful Life. I hate all of it. Yeah. But I think that is probably where we're going.
I don't want to pivot because that's such an interesting idea, and you tend to know these things because you're pretty well-sourced. But I am curious to get your thoughts. Bill Belichick in college football would be what?
An experiment. It would certainly be that. I think it would be temporary. I'm not intrigued with it. I'm not enamored by it at all. I think that when you looked at that headline yesterday, and you saw Belichick has delivered like a 400-plus page Bible to North Carolina powers that be, and it lays out everything from strategy to staffing to organizational structure to salary structure. That all sounds good, and it sounds revolutionary to maybe the common fan who I'm not speaking pejoratively of the common fan, but the common fan does not see behind the scenes in these programs. So that kind of headline sounds revolutionary. It's not any more revolutionary than the fact that the sun came up this morning at this point in college football. Everybody who's anybody is already doing that stuff. Like years and years ago at this point, your Texases and Michigans and Georgias and Oregons and whatnot, they realized the way the sport was going. They aren't stupid. They realized this is going to reflect a lot of what they do on Sunday. So we need a general manager. We need a cap specialist. We need to understand how to fundraise. We need to understand how to properly construct roster. We need to understand how to evaluate not just high school kids, but college kids. So we understand free agency principles. All that stuff's already in practice. Bill Belichick's not bringing a single revolutionary concept to North Carolina if he does come to Carolina. The key for him to win there would be the same key for anyone else to win anywhere. It's, do you have a good staff, And are you able to acquire talent? That's it. And the reason this hasn't been hammered home yet, the reason it's not a done deal, is either because he's asking for things above and beyond what they're willing to come to terms with, which may be the case, or you're dealing with a situation where maybe they're not sure he's going to be around that long. Maybe he's using that as a stepping stone, or maybe like a little rest stop to try and wait for an NFL job that he finds desirable to come open that would offer him. And I think a lot of that's in play. So I don't look at it as, whoa, if they get Belichick, watch out. To me, it's if they get Belichick, watch. Like, period. Just watch. Let's see what happens. I'm not enamored with it at all.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there. Josh Pate is our guest, the commissioner of the sport. His show live every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock our time on YouTube. Go check it out. Josh Pate's College Football Show, at Josh Pate CFB on Twitter. I did want to ask you something on Conference Championship Weekend. It kind of connects to that point that we were just talking about how this might look in the future. Like, you know, we love the sport. I think that's the beautiful thing about it. We can come at it from different sides, and we've debated the playoff expansion with you for years. And I'm as pro-expansionist as they come, but I had a take on Monday that my co-host looked at me like I was an alien when I brought it up. It was the first time that for me, not that I didn't love the games, and Georgia, Texas was awesome, and my alma mater went 13-0 and won a Big Ten championship and beat Penn State, but there was a little bit of it for me, I'm not going to lie, that I'm going to concede the point, like, I don't know what the phrase would be, a little bit of the edge of your seatness was gone from the games, knowing that the outcome was essentially predetermined, and in the back of my mind wondering, if my team wins this, are they going to get the worst draw in the college football playoff?
And they debatably
did. Is it better that they lose this game? It was a very weird thing. So taking off the Josh Pate College Football Show hat and putting on the, like, we know you love this stuff and you live and you breathe it, and that's why you do it, and that's why we love your show, the college football fan hat, was your viewership affected at all conference championship weekend as maybe it used to be in years past?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
Look, I am certainly not an I told you so guy. You guys know how humble I am and how deferent I am to self-praise. This is not me at all. But the problem is, the problem with my stance always was, if we get to the point where I'm proven right, it doesn't matter because things are already messed up anyway. So, like, there's no pleasure in having been right about that. Now, here's what I've also said. This is the first version of this. So I will not put it past the powers that be to make changes that recrystallize the urgency and magnitude on regular season games and conference title games. It could happen. But I think everyone would be kidding themselves if they didn't admit what you just admitted. I was not in Atlanta. I was in Dallas, but I had obviously a bunch of buddies at the SEC championship game. And one of them, who's been around for a long time, he texts me and he says, I got to be honest, this has like an exhibition game vibe to it. I can't really explain it, but I've covered this game for a long time. It's two big brands. This place is packed. So, like, everything should feel as authentic as it always has, but it just doesn't feel that way. And the reason it didn't feel that way is because last year's game featured Georgia and Alabama, and there was a perfect record with Georgia, knowing that if they lost, they were out of the thing.
Yeah.
That is urgency. That is college football with no safety net under it. When you put the safety net under it, you can still have really good teams. You can still have a really good game. But the level of play is never what has sold college football as being authentically great. If you wanted highest level of play, you just watch the NFL every Sunday. The urgency, the tightrope walk 100 feet above the ground, that's what college football big games have been. And so the trade-off was, we're going to give some of that up to have a bigger playoff, and some people liked it and some people didn't. But even the people who did like it, I'm talking to one right now. You just said, hey, I liked it, but I got to admit now, it has impacted this. I guess how you decide whether you're happy or not is, do you care about the college football playoff enough to where that trade-off is worth it? I've just never cared about the playoff. I've never cared about the postseason enough. I value the regular season, and I'm kind of come what may on the postseason. That makes no sense to an average pro sports fan, because pro sports are built around the postseason, and I understand that, and I'll grant you that. That's why when I watch Braves baseball, I'm thinking about the postseason. If I were to watch the Falcons, I'm thinking about the postseason, as funny as that sounds. But with college football, like if I were watching the University of Georgia, man, I'm thinking about whether they're going to beat Tennessee, how they stack up against Florida this year. Are they going to play Bama? That's kind of the different lens I've always viewed college football through.
Yeah, and not to kind of just like play devil's advocate to play devil's advocate, and this is why I was surprised. If his team would have lost to Penn State, I don't think he's coming in Monday shrugging his shoulders saying, I don't care. You don't want to be the big team that James Franklin beats. You don't want to be on the other side of the dollar argument. You don't want to have your perfect season ruined in a conference championship. And I think it may take a season, two, maybe three, Josh, for us to figure this out. But I think you heard Kirby talk about it. I think Dan would probably agree. Wouldn't you rather have a bye? So, like, I hear what you're saying, but if Georgia loses to Tennessee, it doesn't ruin their season. But, man, it ruins their week. You think Legend's calling into Feinbaum less because Alabama may lose a game to Georgia or Vanderbilt or whoever and say, well, we only have one loss, we're still in the playoff. I still think these people care. I think everybody does care. If the Ducks would have lost their final regular season game of the year, they still would have been in the Big Ten title game, and they largely probably are still in the playoff. But, man, ask Duck fan how they would have felt if they would have lost their fourth straight game to Husky fan. That's kind of where I just differ with you guys on this is, yes, the big broad picture's still there, but a lot of the emotions of that stuff, it still lingers. Miami had a great year by all accounts. They were 10-2. They had a year that they built that up. Their talent pool's getting better. It's a disappointment for people, but they had a 10-2 season. So, like, there are elements, I think, where both sides of this stuff are right.
I think you're right about Miami, but then also wrong about Miami. You're,
exactly.
You're right that they had a better season. Yes, they did. In fact, Mario's gone from 5-7 to 7-5 to now 10-2 this year.
Yeah.
Okay, so by any discernible metric, they have improved their program year over year. That would be in the previous life. Do you know what people are actually saying about Miami right now, including their own fan base? They're calling themselves abject failures.
Yes.
And they're calling themselves that because the entire tenor of the sport has changed to where if you're not in the postseason, it is zero sum. You're either a success or a failure. And I remember when I was a kid, which is not that long ago, I remember thinking to myself, if like a Tennessee comes into the season with 6-6 expectations, you're kind of thinking in terms of tiers. Like, man, I wonder if we could get to 8 wins. That'd be great. If we get to 9 wins, that'd be exceptional. And there were these tiers that were based relative to expectation. Now it's, you either made the playoff or you didn't. That's all the oxygen in the room. Everything about meaning in the sport has to have a playoff sticker affiliation tag on it. And I've never really loved that.
Yeah, Josh Pate, he's the commissioner of the sport. Catch his show every Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, 5 o'clock live on YouTube. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Josh Pate CFB. He's our favorite. We could do this for hours. Thanks as always, my man. Look forward to the next one.
Sorry, brother. Appreciate it.
There you go. Josh Pate, the commissioner of the sport. Let's react a little bit. We'll start the final hour there. The Daily Ticker, as always, brought to you by our great friends at Pelican Brewing Company. Celebrating the season with Bad Santa Cascadian. Dark Ale. Bad Santa's coming to town, baby. We got a loaded final hour, some fun with audio, reaction to some of that conversation, transfer portal updates loaded. Don't go anywhere. Sprague on 1080 The Fam.